Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very senior and accomplished public health professional from Noida, India, Dr. Raj Shankar Ghosh. Dr. Ghosh, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Ghosh is a senior public health consultant. He's a former director of immunizations in PATH India. He's also been the vice president and regional director South Asia for One World Health. And he has been a senior advisor for vaccine delivery at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So Dr. Ghosh, before we talk about public health, tell me a little bit about your own amazing journey in public health.
Oh, thank you so much. So, in terms of the public health journey, I started about three decades back from a very small village in Rajasthan, in Churu district. So I was married in 1992 and we were planning our kind of honeymoon and where to go. And then I got this wonderful job offer in Rajasthan.
Okay.
So my wife said that let's move there. And we started our journey in Churu district, as I said, catering to about 50 villages, delivering primary health care. And it was very interesting. Camel rides, you know, riding on sand dunes, fantastic journey. So the project ended there. And then, I came back to Calcutta and met my mentor in public health, Mr. Tushar Ganjilal. And he said that, you know, if you are really, you know, planning to go into public health, do join the government service to look at the health systems, the public health systems. So there was an opportunity, and I was lucky that the West Bengal Health Services was recruiting medical officers. So I joined the West Bengal Health Services, and I went to a small primary health center in a very beautiful setting in North Bengal.
Wow.
Deep within the forests of Jalpaiguri district, where I was born, actually. So it was almost returning to my native land. And there, you know, I really learned the nitty-gritties of public health, as we say, and working deep within the government system in the primary health center as a medical officer. I worked there for about 5 years, and then I suddenly saw an advertisement for a recruitment of surveillance medical officers, the first batch in World Health Organization for the polio program. That was 1997. And then I joined the World Health Organization as a surveillance medical officer. And then I got promoted as a regional coordinator for the Southeast region within India and started working in states of Jharkhand, Orissa, Chhattisgarh into the health systems and immunization.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I'd like to move to vaccination.
Yes, given
our limited time, I'd like to move to, and since you've told me about the World Health Organization, let's talk a little bit about public health and vaccination.
Yes.
Let me start by asking you, can you give me an overview of the current state of vaccination in India and the progress that has been made? Because I know the Pulse Polio campaign that you were a part of has been applauded all over the world.
Right. So I'll begin from 1995, as you rightly said, the Pulse Polio program began. And with that, you know, there has been a sea change in terms of the planning, the execution, and the monitoring of the vaccination program. Over the past, two and a half decades, India's immunization program has really moved upscale. We have a very high coverage now. The most important thing that has happened is that we have a very steady supply of vaccines. India's vaccine manufacturing, the R&D and the supply systems have really gone high. The other thing that has happened is in terms of access, except a few very difficult geographic areas of which we can discuss, there has been generally a good access to vaccines. And if we have seen the last report of UNICEF's State of the Children, which was published a few weeks back, the population in India, their confidence on vaccines is almost 98%, which speaks heavily of the demand that people have around vaccines in India. So it's been a very rewarding journey, I must say.
Fantastic. But what would you say are some of the main challenges we face in India when it comes to vaccine distribution and administration?
So I would say that, you know, there are three major challenges that we must speak of. One is, you know, in terms of the vaccine confidence, which we talk about equity and inclusiveness. During the COVID vaccination, you know, we covered more than 2 billion population. Right. But then there are pockets of population, say, talking about the transgender population, the population around people living with disabilities, then people who have, you know, the migrant population. There has been challenges in terms of, you know, our ability to reach them timely with the vaccine. The second thing that has been there is around the issue about the health worker fatigue, because, you know, there are too many public health programs now, and there is only one last mile delivery person, which is the health worker. We must address this problem in their capacity building and also in their effectiveness of delivery.
Right.
And the third thing that I will talk about is that in terms of, you know, the access, we still have pockets in Northeast, we still have pockets in urban, particularly the peri-urban areas where we have, you know, missed pockets. So those are areas that we really need to work on.
Very interesting. And I also wanted to get your perspective that how has the recent pandemic impacted our vaccination strategy? And what lessons have we learned from it?
Yes. So I'll tell this, but with a brief anecdote. You know, in 2002, I was in charge of the polio program in Jharkhand. I had met a district magistrate in Bokaro district where the program was not happening well. After this person joined the district magistrate, the program suddenly started happening very well. So I met him and I congratulated him on the turnaround in the program. And I asked him as to how did he address the various gaps that were there. So he said, I have addressed the gap by addressing the gap. And then I asked him to explain. He said that the gap stands for governance, accountability, and partnerships.
Very interesting.
In the COVID vaccination, you know, one of the key things was the governance mechanism that was set up. So right from the Prime Minister's office down to the district magistrate, there was a chain of command and there was a governance mechanism that was set up, which was unique. The second is that, you know, there were fixed accountabilities on people who were, you know, kind of addressing the various issues of the program, from the procurement to the supply to the access. Everybody knew what their job was, and there was a very clear line of accountability. And the third is around the partnerships that were built with particularly the international donor agencies, with the vaccine manufacturers, with the public sector, and the various community-based organizations, unique partnership. So I'll say that the success of the COVID vaccination was because we could address the gap with the governance, accountability, and the partnerships.
Oh, wonderful. And I love this acronym for the GAP, governance, accountability, and partnership. My next question to you, sir, is what role do cultural, social, and religious factors play in vaccine hesitancy or acceptance in India, or for that matter, anywhere in the world?
Absolutely. So we have wonderful lessons from our pulse polio program and from, you know, the measles rubella vaccine campaign programs, the Mission Indradhanush programs, and all of that on this. Now, cultural and religious factors are very, very important drivers of acceptance and confidence on vaccines. There are, you know, three ways that we have tried to address this. One is ensuring that there is good awareness of the vaccine. Wherever we have failed to deliver the message correctly and timely, we have had disruptions in terms of the vaccine coverage. Through our pulse polio learnings, the measles learnings, we have been able to do that. The second is that we must ensure that people are at the center of the planning and the policy that we do, which means that community-based organizations are now becoming increasingly part of the National Technical Advisory Group on Immunization, which, you know, kind of defines the policy around the vaccination program. That has been helpful. And the third is the professional organizations, the Indian Medical Association, the Indian Academy of Pediatricians. So particularly in the Northeast parts and some of the pockets where there are deep religious kind of findings. Northeast, I say, because there are cultural issues there. The health workers, they have developed innovative mechanisms. For example, I'll say that It is not more about the hesitancy. It's about the indifference. They do not see the vaccine preventable diseases.
Correct.
They don't see polio. They don't see a case of diphtheria. They don't feel the urgency of vaccination. Hmm. It is very important for us to give them the right message about the, you know, the perils of the vaccine preventable diseases coming back. And that is how we keep on motivating. Health workers are doing a good job on that.
Very interesting. And Dr. Ghosh, how are emerging technologies like artificial intelligence, data analytics being used to optimize vaccine supply management and distribution in India?
Yes. One thing I think, you know, we should be very proud of is how we are using technology for our vaccination program.
Correct.
Starting from the Electronic Vaccine Intelligence Network, which is completely across the country to the last mile, driving the status of the vaccine supply and the quality of the vaccine is a phenomenal thing. It is a homegrown technology that has been used. The COVID technology, which was, you know, introduced during the COVID vaccination program, has been unique in a way that people were for the first time able to decide on their own about when to get vaccinated, where to get vaccinated, which vaccine to take. This is huge empowerment. The third thing about technology is around the data. I think there's a lot of room to, you know, a lot of miles to walk on that. India has been struggling in some way with its data. The good part is the government is aware of it, but the government is also very protective of its data for multiple reasons.
Correct.
I think that is an area where we really have the resources to move forward with artificial intelligence and other tools, and we will walk that path, I'm sure.
Fascinating. Great response. Thank you. My next question is that how does the government of India prioritize different vaccines for different age groups and population segments?
Right. So let me, you know, take this opportunity to talk to you about, you know, how do we introduce new vaccines?
Correct.
So it's called a P cycle that we have. And the question that you asked will be embedded in the answer that you give. So the first thing is the identification of a problem. For example, you know, pneumonia, childhood pneumonia is a problem. Rota vaccine is a problem, the diarrhea. So the first issue is about a problem. The second is there are too many problems. Therefore, we prioritize the problem based on the data and the evidence that we have.
Right.
Once we have prioritized, the third P comes, which is the policy that needs to be taken on the prioritized problem. Once we have taken the policy, we look at which product is going to be available, which means which vaccines are available in order to address the problem.
Right.
For example, malaria may be a problem, but we don't have a vaccine to address malaria.
Correct.
But once we have identified the product, the next is about what is the cost of the product, because we have limited resources.
Right.
That, you know, is the other P, which we call paisa. Now, once we have determined the paisa, which is required to do this, then we come for procurement. Once the vaccine is procured, we have planning. And once the planning is done, we have the program. Once into the program, new problems are identified and the whole cycle is repeated. Now, data, evidence, these and research that is going on in the field is the source of our resources for prioritizing the public health problem that needs to be addressed with the vaccine.
What a fascinating response. And therefore, this gives me the segue to my next question, which are what are some of the more promising vaccines currently in development in India? And what, in your opinion, will they impact public health in future?
So one of the game-changing vaccines is the cervical cancer vaccine, the HPV vaccine, which has been developed by Serum Institute of India, which will, in all probability, soon be introduced into the program and will make a huge, you know, benefit for people, for women, particularly. The second vaccine is definitely the respiratory syncytial vaccine virus, respiratory syncytial virus vaccine, RSV vaccine, which will address to a lot of the childhood, infections that are there around the respiratory infections. The malaria vaccine is being tried out in Africa. If that is scaled up and we have a good vaccine, which has a good response, it's going to be great. The typhoid vaccine is still not into the India's program. We need to have that into the program. And then there is the HIV/AIDS vaccine, which, you know, there is a hope that we will have someday to address that problem.
So one of the other questions that a lot of people do ask is that how long does it take from the time you identify a problem, as you mentioned, till the vaccine actually is delivered to an individual? And I know that the COVID-19 was really an exception.
COVID is an outlier. COVID is an outlier.
Correct.
The thing that we will have to remember, however, is that COVID gave us a lot of opportunity to look at our R&D. One is the strengthening of the research and development, the platforms that have been built. The COVID vaccine was not developed, you know, so suddenly if we did not have a platform for the development of the mRNA vaccine, which had been worked for years upon.
Correct.
So I will say that, you know, if you would have asked me this question 10 years back, my answer would have been different. 5 years back, it would have been different. But today, I do see a lot of encouraging results coming, because there are three things that we need to do. One is we really need to look at the R&D platforms that are accessible globally in order to ensure that we can deliver, we can develop vaccines faster. The second thing is that we really need to relook at our regulatory bodies to strengthen them so that they can live up to that pace with which vaccines are being developed. And the third thing that we really need to do is we need to kind of break the barriers between companies and between nations in terms of the dialogues that they have. The wonderful partnerships that we had during COVID, unthinkable that GSK and Merck would sit together to collaborate on a vaccine. That, you know, a national institute like NIV Pune, part of the ICMR, would work with Bharat Biotech, a profitable organization, to kind of deliver vaccines. So we must look at these models more closely and ensure that all the best partnerships and technologies that are available are available to, you know, humans saving lives. So yeah, across the R&D, regulatory, and the partnerships between the various, you know, developers must be, you know, strengthened.
Fascinating. I mean, you are emphasizing the need for collaboration, you know, for public health and vaccines. And I think, I don't think you could have said anything more powerful on, you know, to say how important it is to for private and public sector to be really able to collaborate.
But the good part is that all of them are realizing this. It's not that, you know, it's on text. Now people are doing it by action.
Correct, correct. There's another aspect that I wanted to get your perspective on, and that is the misinformation and disinformation on vaccines around the world.
Right.
I mean, you know, there are the naysayers about vaccines and so on. I'd love to get your perspective on how important are vaccines and how what should the average human person react to these?
Right. So we must distinguish, first of all, between misinformation and disinformation is something that arises out of ignorance.
Correct.
Disinformation is something which is done in order with a planned way. So there are two very different strategies to deal both of these. With misinformation, I think the onus lies on us, the public health community, the governments, that we have not been able to reach with the right message at the right time to the right people with the right context. And therefore, you know, the onus. In case of disinformation, you know, there is a complete different strategy that we must work on. Now, in case of disinformation, the social media does play a huge role.
Correct.
And it is great to see during the kind of COVID that the you know, the powerhouse of social media, the Meta and everyone, they came forward and they were in the forefront of addressing this. So if I today type anything on vaccine, so what happened is that during this entire, you know, COVID period, if we now go to Google, so you type vaccine and then it tells you first that if you are talking about vaccines, you know, you need to go to this reliable site. Community has a huge role to play. For example, you know, it is the job on us to talk to our peers, to talk to our family members, to talk to our neighbors about the benefits that vaccine bring. There is nothing called the absolute safe vaccine. There are always kinds of some adverse reactions that happen.
Correct.
What we need to talk about is the balance between the benefits and the risks of vaccination. And that is where, you know, it highly outweighs the risks of, you know, not getting a vaccine and having a vaccine preventable disease. So I think the onus on misinformation is with us. On disinformation, the social media and other kind of tools must be activated to respond to it.
Fascinating. So Dr. Ghosh, I have time for two more questions. Yeah. My next question is on India's vaccine manufacturing capacity. I'd love to get your perspective on how does India contribute to global vaccine supply?
70% of the low and middle income countries' vaccine today is supplied by India, the Indian manufacturers. And there is no more pride, you know, I have as an Indian than to see the progress that it has made since, say, 2001. You know, when the MenAfriVac was developed at Serum Institute of India for Africa, not for India, for Africa. From then, you know, we have moved many, many steps forward with, you know, India being a powerhouse of vaccine supply. Having said that, you know, we also have a responsibility to really act as the world's largest vaccine manufacturer. I was very happy to see the vaccine Maitri program that the government had launched during the COVID vaccination, when we took the initiative as a country to ensure that some of the countries which were not having access to vaccines had an access to vaccine. The technology, and India has done fabulous, I must say, that in terms of sharing, we have shared technologies around the event, around the vaccine manufacturing. We have broken all kinds of, you know, technological barriers. That initiative needs to really come up. And India needs to lead by example by sharing vaccines more with the whole world. 70% is supported through Gavi and UNICEF. We need to do more.
Fantastic. And since you spoke about Gavi, let me ask you a question. And I've had the privilege of serving on the Gavi board for 8 years. How does the government of India work with global organizations like Gavi and WHO to improve vaccine coverage?
So there are three ways that, you know, global organizations work with the government of India. One is around the supply of vaccines, which, you know, organizations like Gavi do. But they just provide the seed, the fraction of the starting vaccine, and then India picks up with its resources. The other thing that we must acknowledge is the technical assistance that India receives from various global partners, Gavi, WHO, UNICEF, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, JSI, the Clinton Health Access Initiative, BARC, and various other organizations.
Right.
The third kind of support that we receive is in terms of the connections that we build. For example, you know, the global agencies, they are the ones who also kind of support India's cause for, you know, getting the right kind of vaccine supply, the right kind of vaccine support from various agencies. And, you know, universities like the John Hopkins University, the Harvard University are closely working with the government of India now in order to take things forward for the demand generation and various other business cases that we need to put forward.
Fascinating. So I'm going to ask you one more question. And this is, you know, given your vast experience of vaccines, how do you, Dr. Ghosh, foresee India's vaccination landscape evolving over the next 5 to 10 years? And what will be the key drivers of change?
Yes. So the key drivers of change, I'll get to that first. I think are three. One is the data. The second is the technology. And the third is how we keep up the communication with our communities, which in our public health parlance is called the social mobilization. There are two risks that I see. One is around the complacency, because we have been able to really drive away most of the vaccine preventable diseases. We must understand that the moment we lower our guard, these diseases will come back into our society. So therefore, we cannot have any complacency. And the second thing that we have is that, you know, in terms of the vaccine expansion and things that are happening, we need to understand that vaccines alone will not solve the problem. A child needs to be nutritious, a child needs to be, you know, educated. So therefore, we must invest in our other social development factors in order to ensure that vaccines really work well. Therefore, an integrated package of vaccination, nutrition, education, the sanitation, all of these are very important priorities for the government of India to address.
Well said. And on that note, Dr. Ghosh, I just want to say this has been such an amazing conversation. You know, you've reignited all my love for vaccines. You've taken me back so many years when I was, you know, involved much more with vaccines. Thank you for talking to me about public health. Thank you for talking to me about your journey. Thank you for talking to me about so many intricate details about vaccine delivery. And thank you for talking to me about where you see India going as a vaccine supplier and vaccines for our people. Thank you again, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.